You're listening to the Overeaters Anonymous Mid-Peninsula podcast. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. For more information, please visit oamidpeninsula.org.
And returning members.
Welcome.
And for me too, I'm really happy to be here, and I haven't been to many in-person meetings for some time. I've been going to a 7 a.m. I live in the city. I live in Glen Park neighborhood, and I used to go to an in-person meeting at 7 a.m., believe it or not, in San Francisco, and that meeting was seven people, and then went online, and now it's anywhere from 50 to 100 people on a daily basis. It's funny how things happen, isn't it? Anyway, so I see my local friends, and I see people from all over the world there, which makes me very happy. But I'm really happy to be in an in-person meeting. Okay, so let me just start by the stuff that we like to know. You'll see the photos. I came into OA in 2001. I was 218 pounds. I'm currently 160 pounds. And I have a history of up and down. I'm a yo-yo person. From a pretty, you'll see the pictures from my early age, I look pretty normal. But as a really young kid, I was pretty fat. I was definitely bigger than the kids that were in my Campfire Girl group. So I have this thing of going up and down and up and down. And you know, the step work has helped me see a little bit about what happens to me and why I choose food, but the truth is I'm a compulsive overeater, so I do choose cooked food when I'm in trouble. And I have 3 years of abstinence. I've had as much as a 15-year relapse. I never left the rooms. This is not easy, folks. Anyway, that'll be part of my story. Never left the rooms. Right now I have 3 years of back-to-back abstinence, which means I'm not compulsively eating. And that has allowed me a lot of healing, and I'll talk more about that here. That'll be great. So what it was like was I grew up in a loving family that was alcoholic and pretty dysfunctional. My mother became alcoholic in my middle school years. She was a really bright, wonderful woman. And she really fell into the disease and I think lost her way. And I just always felt as a kid, it's like, if you really loved her, she wouldn't do this. You know, this is what I thought. And just love of her is a big part of my life. And I will say that thanks to her and watching her journey in alcoholism helped me to get into program. I'm grateful for that. My father was the other side of the illness. He was more of the controlling type of guy and judging. And both my brother and I got, my brother got the worst of that. I got some of it too. And you know, what that has put in my body is a lot of fear in trying to control life. And I remember the first time, so how food showed up in my life is pretty young. I remember stealing food from my mother, who used to hide food from me. Candy bars and the like. And I remember as a Campfire Girl, I would sell Campfire Girl mints, and I kept one box for myself and shared the light ones with my neighbor and kept the dark ones for me. And with no sense of any consequence of what that would be found out when an inventory was made. So this is like a good example of how compulsive eating has shown up in my life, which is just do it. It's like, it's just such a hand-to-mouth exercise with no thought of any consequences. So to me, that's how addiction shows up, that there's an urgency to it. I do it, and then I just feel like, oh, God, I've done it again. And things that are compulsive, illnesses, whether it's behaviors or substances, in my case, food, alcohol, I recognize that I really have no defense. And this is an interesting thing for me, especially with newcomers or returnees coming back, as we forget. I have no defense against this illness. I have to really take a lot of actions to stay mindful. So more on that will come. But so I talked about stealing sweets, I hit things, I was overweight as a young girl, I got to be a teen, I got some wonderful advantages, I got to go overseas as an exchange student, and I was so active and busy, I lost the weight. I wasn't thinking about food. I think I was pretty connected with people. I think this is the key. We stay connected with people who understand us, and we have a really good chance of having a normal life. Anyway, I came back from that experience slender and not eating compulsively, and then sort of fell back into my family behaviors and fell back into compulsive eating. Slowly, you'll see it in the photos. Actually, when you see the photos, you'll see there's like two or three in the beginning where I look pretty normal, but that was the start. I got a job, and that was the start of my adding on weight. Because you know what? When I was left to my own devices and cooking for myself, the type of meals I would make was a bowl full of mashed potatoes, you know, or some concoction. This may resonate with some of you. I'd make, you know, what did I have in the refrigerator? I had butter, and I had flour, and I had, you know, I don't know, things I would mix up together and make something with it. Not really having any sense that that would be a bad thing. And so I put on, in my first, I'd say, 10 years of working, I went from a size probably 10 to a size 16 or 18. And just really, you know, at the bottom of that, just not feeling good about myself, you know, never feeling good about myself, always feeling like I was hiding my body. And what else do I need to say to you so you know that you can really hear that I'm a compulsive overeater? I did a lot of hiding. So that is, I think, a consequence of being a compulsive eater, is I would eat alone. I would make my food at home. I would eat alone. I wouldn't let other people see me do it. Or I'd go out for dinner with other people, and then I'd come home and I'd have some more. And anytime I had a feeling, really, positive or negative, that was a reason to eat, because I really didn't know how to handle intense feelings. That's sort of really what I eat about, I think. So I got into AA in 2000 because I saw myself doing what my mother had been doing. And thank God for that. I did go first there. Did not work the steps there. And I gained more weight when I stopped drinking. And a year after that, I went to OA in San Francisco, the Ocean Avenue meeting. Some of you probably know that one. It's moved to another location, but it's been there a long time. I saw a lot of people that looked pretty healthy to me, and I started crying, and I became willing to ask for a sponsor. It took me a few weeks to find one. I'd listen for someone. This is a clue. I listened for someone who talked about spirit. I knew I didn't have that. I knew I didn't have that. I had a lot of knowledge. I was a smart girl. I had accomplishments, but I did not know anything about spirit. And so I asked that person to be my sponsor. She had offered to be my temporary sponsor, which I took offense at, by the way. But the truth was, she just wanted to see if I'm really ready and willing to work it. And she stayed with me, and I stayed with her. And worked through the steps. I can remember the third step ceremony that she put me through, which was just such a beautiful spiritual experience. started to learn how to be honest and how to have my feelings and how not to eat over them, but to let people see me and not hide and not try to control. All those skills that I learned in childhood, really, to learn that they really didn't help me very much. That it was much better to be honest and be present in the world and not to use over my feelings, whether it's food or alcohol or any other substance. So I got abstinent. I was 218 pounds. I lost 75 pounds in a year. It took me a year. Just, had a food plan. I talked to my sponsor about anything that changed or if I felt uncomfortable about any foods, and stayed on the plan and worked the steps. And, I will say for those who are working the steps for the first time, step five, a lot of people talk about 4 and 9, I'm talking about step five. Step five, which is where I actually let myself be seen in all of my defects of character. That was transformative for me. I remember hyperventilating before I had that conversation with my sponsor, which was reading my 4-step, I just felt like a huge boulder was taken out of my chest. I just was honest and empty of hiding secrets for the first time in my life. That was and has been one of the biggest blessings, and having gone through that, that's the reason, that is like the reason to do the 4-step, to actually let go of all that shit and know that you're human and that that's okay. That's totally okay. That's what we're supposed to be. And that means strengths and weaknesses, and we need help. So I think that's the thing I would say about normies. They know they need help. Somehow or other, we get the message that we didn't. We do need help, and we get it here. I never looked better in my whole life. I don't have a picture in there to show how gorgeous I was after I lost that 75 pounds, but I was really, I couldn't really grasp it, but I look at a picture now and it's like, wow, Kim, you really look present in your body. You really look good. You are yourself and happy. And that's what abstinence looks like, whatever age we are. This is what abstinence looks like at 68. I'm really happy. I have a lot of freedom and I have a lot of very important contacts in my life. And I'm totally human and I make mistakes and I try to, make amends as quickly as I can and learn from them. And I have a chance to do that here. So what happened? So what happened is after about 2 years of abstinence, I wanted to start dating. I got into a relationship and made the choice to leave where I was living. So I rented my house. I moved up to Marin County and I got into a relationship. And this is the start of a relapse, is really what I'm going to describe to you now. I went to a meeting in Marin every Saturday. I took a little bit of issue. It felt like the people were not abstinent who were doing service. I took offense to that. I stopped thinking that they had anything to tell me. I stopped seeing a sponsor. I stopped doing my writing and the steps. I started realizing that, or I didn't realize, but I do in retrospect, that I started letting my partner make food choices for me. So I lost accountability over my food, and I wasn't being honest about it or being knowledgeable about it. So this was over a period of really a year and a half, 2 years. Wasn't really obvious to me, but I started eating foods that really were not on my food plan or were chosen by someone else. And I feel like I made my partner my higher power. I made someone else the higher power. That person knows, we'll take care of it. And so that was the start of what I would call 15 years of half measures. 15 years of half measures, which if you know the big book, tells you they don't help us at all. And that was my experience. It was like I would go to a meeting, I'd be gaining weight, I wouldn't have. This is a rigorous program, I didn't have the tools or the steps in place to help support me, and that's what it requires to stay spiritually fit. This is the thing. We want to be spiritually fit. That requires working the tools and the steps. And the beauty is I didn't leave the room, so I did hear the message. And what happened is at the end of that 15 years, I saw someone I knew in program who looked normal. And I said, what are you doing? What I'm doing is not working. What are you doing? And she pointed me back to the literature. And she had me look at one of the food plans in the Dignity of Choice. She said, this plan, whatever the plan was, don't think it matters, frankly. Choose a plan. And I said, well, I could do that. And then when I read the rest of the brochure, it's like, oh my God, I totally forgot the quantities. I totally forgot the combinations. I need to have a clear plan of eating, and I need to be open about it. So that's where I started. And at the same time, this is when we went into being locked down during pandemic, I saw the most extraordinary, beautiful service happening to keep our meetings going in San Francisco online. And it was like a surrender. It was a huge surrender. I can be helpful.
5 minutes.
Thank you, perfect. I can be helpful. It's like, you know, I may only have a few months of abstinence, but I can be helpful. And I started being helpful and of service. And that put me on a path of being in my meetings on a regular basis, hearing the message, being helpful, doing the steps, and doing everything that was needed, getting a sponsor, putting all those pieces back together. The sponsor, the writing, the reading, the having a sponsee, being open, being honest, sharing, not hiding, you know, just being part of. That's, I think, what it takes. That's what it takes. And if we do that, which seems like sometimes a lot of work, it doesn't really feel like a lot of work. It's going to a meeting in the morning. It's doing, you know, half an hour of writing and reading a day. It's staying connected with people on the phone. It's, you know, having the number of sponsees that I know I can fit into my day as a retiree. That feels right, and I still have a life. And knowing what that boundary is. And just really being connected with other people in program. And not hiding, saying what's true, which that's the hardest part, but that is the most important part for me. And let's see, what do I want to say at the end? So now I do all those things. I have been working another program. I've become willing to do that. I've gotten a lot out of that journey. Of healing some of my childhood stuff. And I don't do it perfectly. I just need everyone to hear me say that. We deal with food every day, at least 3 times a day. There's going to be a day when I choose some food at a restaurant. It's like, you know what? That wasn't the best choice. Mm-hmm. Was it a compulsive choice? Well, if I went, maybe. I went and I chose, looked at the menu in advance, and I chose this, and now I'm changing it to that. Is it, you know, bad food? No. Is it okay? Is it a food that I eat all the time? Yes. Could I have made a better choice? Yes. You know what? That's okay for today. I recognize that. I say it to someone, and I remember, you know what? That particular food triggers me a bit. I also have a food buddy that I send my food to every day, and I sent a message to him, you know what, I notice that this thing doesn't work for me. I'm going to change it from my future food plan that I gave you this morning. It's not going to be in my afternoon food plan. I'm going to put this in instead. And he sends me a message and says, thank you. This is how we support each other. So are we close?
You have 2 minutes left.
Okay, so then I live in gratitude. I live in gratitude for what I have in this program and what it gives me. I used to think work was work. Now I think of it as self-care. Self-care keeps me well. I swim 3 times a week. I really think, you know, the next step for me is to build more weight-bearing exercises into my life because I owe my body a huge amends. I've misused my body for most of my life. I put on 70 pounds, took off 75, took off 60, took off 50, and whatever the combination was. I have put it through so much stress and so much fear. And now it's about making amends to my body that carries my soul and that is going to keep me well for the rest of my life. So that's a big part of my retirement focus, is that I'm making amends to my body and I'm asking higher power to guide me in what that looks like a day at a time. And I get to do beautiful things. I get to travel the world. I just spent a month in France. I did not pick up my pinch hoods at all. I set myself up to have a kitchen so that I can make my own food. I know when I go out for a restaurant, to a restaurant, what I'm going to eat and what it looks like. And, you know, I put it in my food plan so I know what I'm committing myself to. This is the thing. When I'm using food, I can't do any of that. It takes me, you know, I really have to surrender. So it's this combination of asking higher power for guidance daily, all the time, whenever needed. Noticing when I'm anxious and ask higher power to take it from me and give me an intuitive voice, what's my next right step? Making sure I'm doing loving actions for my body, being connected with fellows, letting my emotions come out and not hide them. And that's our spiritual path. And I'm really happy to be on it with you guys. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim. That's great.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Overeaters Anonymous podcast, hit the like button and subscribe to receive future episodes. If you are looking for a meeting online or in person, visit www.oamidpeninsula.org.